Hello. The makers of this product would like to sincerely apologize for the absolutely atrocious quality of this particular episode. Due to various circumstances ranging from internet troubles, microphone troubles, and possibly a contagion that took over from the planet Sogo, this is not the highest quality podcast you'll ever hear. Hey, everybody, this is David. And speaking for Tim and myself, we apologize for this episode. We had a lot of technical difficulties, but we made it through to the end, and we hope you guys do too. Apologize for all of that. Sometimes the best laid plans just are what they are. But enjoy as we now present Johnny Has the Keys.
You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that lift them above the average genre fare. Are you new to us? Are you tuning in to us for the first time? We would like to welcome you. You'll get used to this little bit of nonsense and verbal diarrhea that we sometimes spew. But it's all in good fun, and you can't smell it anyway because it's audio. Are you returning? If you're a returning guest, we would like to welcome you back. Obviously, you've caught on that we are a distinct and very odd source of entertainment. My name is Tim, and I am here with my good friend David. He is the co-host here on Johnny Has the Keys. Hello, David.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I love the intro this week. It was great. That's awesome.
I'm going to make it that weird and different every week.
Are you new? You know, it almost started as an infomercial. Can we help you? Are you having geek diarrhea?
Anyway. Do you suffer from alopecia?
No, mesothelioma. That's the big one. Mesothelioma. A word no one knew 10 years ago. I've been good. I've been doing.
Yeah, what have you been doing? I'm trying to get this so that we're alternating because you're going to be taking off on this week. So you go first. What have you been doing this week?
I have done two things. One kind of for you and one kind of for me, but I'm not finished with one, but the other. Anyway, I finally watched Cam. You had suggested Cam a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And everything else. And so I finally watched it. And I did like it, like you said. I thought it was interesting. For those of you who don't know, it's basically the story of a cam girl. I don't know what. I never knew what those were.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, who suddenly finds that, you know, she's trying to get up in the ranks and everything else. And then suddenly finds that somehow her account has been hacked and stolen, and she is able to even watch herself live do stuff that she never did. And that person is getting all of her money and all of her popularity and everything else. And it's the mystery of trying to figure out who's doing this to her and why.
Yeah, I mean, they like disconnect her from her account, and it's her livelihood, and she's on TV, but it's, you know, it's not her.
Yeah, she's crazy. Literally watching herself. And I thought it was very interesting with the way that it seems so plausible that she would get locked out of her account. You know, she's going, this is the password. No, the password was changed. Well, I didn't change it. Well, I'm sorry. I can't tell you anything because you don't have the password. You know, and it was all that kind of high IT crap that you get afraid of. So literally, she had created this pseudo sexy personality. And then it became the other girl pushed it way far the other way. And basically, you know, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but it was an okay thriller, but I do think at the end they kind of like lost it. They didn't really stick to it.
Yeah, it falls apart in Act 3.
Yeah.
I think I said that.
And I think that's exactly what you said on the podcast when you had watched it was that, you know, really good, some good sexy stuff to it, some great performance by her. She's good. Mm-hmm. And it's fairly well directed. It's just the last act just totally falls apart and they don't really fulfill anything. They don't fulfill her character involvement. They don't fulfill the reason why. They don't anything else. They kind of give you some pseudo. This is probably what happened, but nothing ever comes out definite that this is what happened, sort of thing. Or the reasons why. That was the big deal for me, is there no why.
Yeah, there's no real explanation or no payoff, I guess.
And then I also have started, and like I said, I didn't finish it yet, but I have started. I'm like six episodes in into Archive 81, which is the series based on the podcast. And already, I mean, it's drastic liberties from the podcast, but you can still see the core themes in there and some of the character issues and some of the plot points that were in the podcast. For those of you who don't know, Archive 81 was a podcast that was like an old radio play. So lots of drama, lots of sound effects. And it was basically their take on a found footage horror story that was original that they did and everything else. It was picked up by Amazon. Amazon liked it. They turned it into...
No, it was Netflix.
I'm sorry, Netflix, yeah. Picked up by Netflix. Netflix liked it. They turned it into a series. It got really great reviews and has now been renewed for a second season. The podcast itself, I think, is in the fourth season now. But each year is different. It's not the same story.
It's a different story. I figured it would be.
Correct.
Yeah, and very similar to our loose ties with celebrity, you knowing the actor in The Dark and the Wicked and you being a shimp on The Evil Dead, we actually are friends with Joe Powell, whose nephew created Archive 41.
Yep. Yeah, he was the audio engineer for it and was one, and is credited as one of the producers on the series. Right. So good, go Daniel him. Good
I know.
Job.
So it's weird. I guess we need to start doing interviews with some of these people.
We should. Yeah. Actually, it might get us more viewers or whatever. Yeah, or listeners.
I don't know. I think it's our egos getting in the way. Like, we don't need them. We have our own show.
Those people don't know what they're doing. What? No. But we might have some guest stars in the future. You know, you never know. Sort of thing. That would be good.
Maybe even this season.
Maybe. You never know. But what are you even doing? That was just me. That was, so I was like in horror for my genre week, but there you go.
Well, I fell into a bit of a pit of horror. I had to watch this in almost three sittings because it's over 3 hours long, and it is a documentary on Shudder. Oh, whoops. That wouldn't be it. There it is. That was Jane Fonda. It's called Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched, and it is a documentary on folk horror and its origins. Fascinating. I love these documentaries that Shudder is doing. I think they've got one now on Boris Karloff, but they're putting them out fairly regularly. And whoever did it, I should have the name. It's down at the bottom. Kierla Janice. I'm assuming they're European. I'm not sure from what country. Because a lot of this stuff originated in Europe. I just did not realize the depth of which all of this stuff came from. They mentioned the movies, three of the movies that are the most look to as far as folk horror icons, I guess, are The Wicker Man, which is pictured in that picture, as is Blood on Satan's Claw, which I talked to you about last season, I believe, or in some intro. And then there was one other that escapes me at the moment. But you'll notice I have The Witch in there too. They break it down into chapters. And like they'll do a chapter on witches, or they'll do a chapter on, you know, I don't know, pagan rituals or what have you. Really, if any of this interests you out there in listening land, I can't tell you the treasure chest that this documentary is. It will turn you on to a bunch of movies you did not know about. And they show clips from tons of movies I've never seen. And then when I would go to look them up, they're like student films that are only like 20 minutes long and you can't find them anywhere. So this, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in this movie.
Well, the poster's really interesting you've got behind you because I see reference to Wicker Man, The Witch, that other one could be like a Midsommar kind of thing in the bottom left there.
Something with Stonehenge.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And, you know, I love The Witch. Wicker Man, I thought was great for its day. It was a little dated now. Doesn't work for me in a lot of that. But Midsommar, The Witch, that other one that we covered one year with the guys, the four guys in England going on the vacation.
We didn't cover it. We watched it, but we never covered it. It's called The Ritual.
The Ritual. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would do that movie. I like that movie.
I think the same way there's a primal thing about, you know, we don't want to be eaten or lose our will and have to be turned into cannibals. We don't want to become blood-sucking, you know, demons of the night kind of thing. There's also this pagan, there's a higher power that's unseen that's controlling us, you know.
It's also very Lovecraftian where, you know, it's like the old ones or perhaps the earth itself is its own magic and it's much older than we are. And
ancient rituals.
Really cool stuff. You even mentioned when we were talking about a folk horror not long ago, something about a farmer digging something up, and I said, you're thinking of Rawhead Rex. It's that Clive Barker movie where the farmer moves the big rock and there's the monster under it. Well, they have scenes of Rawhead Rex in this movie. I mean, you know, it's like everything that you and I have touched on, I saw and more, much
more. Well, remember the one that always got me, the Barker short in Books of Blood where the guy, I think it's a couple, and they're driving in a car. It's very
Yeah.
And they come across the hill, and it's the two towns that are warring with each other by building themselves, the people, into giant warriors.
It's two giant warriors battling, and they're made up of people tied together.
Tied together. Towns. Yes. Yeah.
It's called. Crazy. That's one of my favorite Clive Barker stories. It's called In the Hills, the Cities. And I think it starts with them encountering like a wave of blood, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because
just like a river of blood washing over
the
road.
Thing has, one of the things has been injured. And I guess, you know, hundreds of people died and all that blood came from them.
Yeah. Wild. It was very wild and very pagan, very primitive. I think there's something that taps into that really, you know, same way we get scared of the wind at night. You know, what if the wind is being controlled by something?
There is a movie right now on Netflix that is referenced in this documentary called The Wind. And I put it on our list.
Wow. Okay.
And it's about a woman on a prairie back in olden times. And it just looks really atmospheric and scary. Another thing, just... We'll move on. But another thing that was kind of cool about this is I didn't realize there were that many scholars into this shit. I don't know. It's like, who are these people and how do they major in folk horror? Because they interview a ton of people for this movie. So it's funny.
Yeah. I just majored in pagan art. Yeah. All I do is
a lot of them are British because it is predominantly a British thing.
Well, so. I think, you know, kind of like what we were talking about right before we started taping, you know, that whole English folklore kind of thing. There's so much history there. You know, it's not all King Arthur. Mm-mm. So, you know, witches, no. Man, witches everywhere. Burner!
Yeah. Well, speaking of odd women.
That's a good segue. Yeah, there you go. Very odd.
Not that witches have to be women, but
in
my pictures they are. What are we talking about today? Actually, we're in your territory. We're in outer space.
We are, hence the little spacescape behind me. We are dealing in the world of science fiction. At this point, a very campy science fiction film. It came out in 1968, produced by Dino De Laurentiis, whose kind of mandate for the movie was make it cheap, make it fast, make it quick kind of thing. Roger Vadim directed, written, it was based on an actual comic book by Jean-Claude Forrester. And it's a little movie called Barbarella, which when it was later released in English, it was Barbarella, Queen of the Galaxy. That is the edited one. But the actual one is Barbarella. You got to watch that one, of course.
To me, she's Barbarella, psychedelle.
I've been singing that song.
Yeah. Bobby Crewe is his name. And I've been listening to it on YouTube for days now.
Planets all stand still.
It stars Jane Fonda. It also has Milo O'Shea. Marcel Marceau is actually David Hemmings, other people that you don't recognize ever again. But the thing that I found interesting was even in the credit sequence, there were seven screenplay writers, and according to research, there were over a dozen people that got pseudo credit for writing this movie. If you're not familiar with it, it is definitely not, to me, it's not a PG-13 film. It was a little bit ahead of its time as far as sexuality and nudity and that sort of thing. Basically, Barbarella is an astronaut in some non-disclosed century ahead of us. She's actually an astro-navigatrix who is sent by the president of the Earth Federation to go and find an evil scientist named Duran Duran who has a positronic ray that he is threatening the whole history of the galaxy. And so they have to go and find him and hopefully stop him. Had you seen this movie before?
I have. It has been a while. I think I first saw it on videotape, like VHS. Or rented on VHS. Obviously, I was not going to movies in 1968, especially movies with naked Jane Fonda in them.
Yep.
I watched it probably because of you, I want to say, or with you, because it wouldn't have been something I would have normally gravitated to. And I thought it was quite silly, actually. So, and not much has changed.
I was just about to say, and now as an older man, do you have a different appreciation of it? It's like, no, not really.
Not really. I mean, I'm not going to gravitate. I mean, I did think she had some great costumes, and I thought it was kind of funny that it was Jane Fonda, you know, big feminist, you know, doing her sex kitten act, which, you know, she has since made peace with, I guess you would say.
Well, I don't know. When she's with Lily Tomlin, they make vibrators. So, you know, she's still got
right.
That
kind of- Well, no, that's empowering, though. They play that as empowering. In this one, she does do a good job, and I read this somewhere, where instead of making her a ditzy blonde, they make her a curious blonde, where, like, she is a very virginal and unexperienced, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, and she does end up defeating everyone at the end. I mean, she does use her, you know, she even blows up his orgasmatron machine, you know, kind of thing. So,
she works them muscles out.
I wanted to start this episode by saying, okay, for those of you who have listened to us all season, there have been some unique sci-fi choices this year. I need to really look at our list for next year because we keep coming up with these. Wow, that wasn't the best example of science fiction ever, was it? You know,
honestly, I'm glad we're taking our time a little more with next year's list because if I had realized if I realized you were doing this particular film, I would have said we need to pair this up with Flash Gordon because it's about the male equivalent. big time.
Of course, and especially the both Dino De Laurentiis versions. I mean, it's a huge key in this. This looks like it could be an episode of Flash Gordon the movie. Mm-hmm. Same kind of aesthetic, even down to the wing design and the little flying, you know, motorcycle-y looking things that they have. I was going, oh my God, this is, it's just like he said, do that again, would you? I'd like to see that again, please.
Oh my God, Dino De Laurentiis. Wow. I will forever associate him with Stephen King, because it was like as soon as Stephen King hit the scene, Dino De Laurentiis produced probably half of his movies in the 80s.
What, all the Firestarter, all that, wasn't that Dino?
Yeah, and Cat's Eye, and I don't know, maybe even Dead Zone, definitely Cujo.
What's weird is a lot of them. He puts the money into this to have these production values, but most of the money seems to have gone into her costume, as opposed to the sets or anything else. Because look at all the money he pumped into Dune, and that production value is amazing. I mean, we even talked about that when we covered it. Was you know the sets and the costumes and the designs of, even though it's not the best made film.
No,
by Lynch,
the effects aren't that great either.
It looks amazing. This is like Battle Beyond the Stars meets, I swear I was like 10 minutes into this and I'd forgotten about her first spaceship. And I was going, oh my God, this is exactly like if Hugh Hefner said, hey, let's make a movie this weekend. Kind of thing. That's what it felt like. It felt like.
But I want a shag spaceship.
I'm sure you do. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Now, let me backtrack. You said there were a bunch of writers. I only have Terry Southern based on the book by Jean-Claude Forest, or the comic book.
But if you watch it, when it says screenplay, it says additional screenplay, and like six names come up, including Roger Vadams. And then if you research this, like almost a dozen other people have said, I contributed to this, whether it was I wrote this scene or I had the idea for this or whatever. And all of them have gotten semi credit for it over the years.
Okay.
And you can tell this movie is so disjointed in its, the way scenes are just thrown together, and we'll just throw her into a tube and she'll end up in the next scene. Okay. Or something, you know.
And she'll scream.
Yeah. just so bizarrely plotted. But basically it was, and what was weird was in doing research for it, I found out that, okay, Vadim was approached to do it by Dino De Laurentiis. He approached Terry Southern, you know, to write the screenplay and all of that. He wanted his former wife to be in it because the original comic book was based on Brigitte Bardot. And he wanted Brigitte Bardot to be in it, and she said, no, I'm not going to do it.
She was tired of doing her sex kitten thing.
So he said, hey, I'll get my new wife.
Yeah.
and he struck me. It was one of the keys I have for this, or an influence I think that it had, was it reminded me of what's his name that was married to John Derek.
Mm-hmm.
And how he went from just like gorgeous wife to gorgeous wife. To gorgeous life all the way down his life. And Roger Vadim seems to be the same way.
Well, and making them a movie star,
right?
Even though they're not.
I'm going to put them like in my movies.
Bo Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, although Fonda does fine in this movie for what
she's
Fonda's
got. A great actress.
Yes.
So it helps. Yeah.
But, you know, we've got nudity in the opening credits. So it's like, yeah. No wonder I liked this as a young man with my VHS sort of thing.
For those of you out there that don't know, Terry Southern, the guy that did the screenplay, is best known for doing Easy Rider, which, even though it's a very popular and for its time sensational, not really sensational, but iconic movie for its time. It's not a great film.
No.
I mean, Easy Rider is not a great film. So even though Terry Southern wrote this, I was not looking for it to be a great film.
No. Production-wise. So, yes, it was put together. And he had an agenda. He actually wanted to do a good movie, I think. It's just that I think there were so many hands in throwing it together and the way they wanted to do it and everything else that they couldn't.
I have a feeling Dino was on the set all the time saying, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Or no, you have to reuse that set, or you have to reuse that thing, except for her costumes. Because she literally has six costume changes in this movie, all of them variously provocative. You know, the very beginning, the first one, she's the credits are her strip teasing in a spacesuit, which is a great setup for the movie. Okay, so as an overview of this, I found it very difficult to watch again. I think as a young guy, I liked it just because of the sexy stuff to it. But in this time, looking at it as a film and everything else, I was like, it's not even funny. If it's going to be a parody and be funny, then do that. But it's really not. The campiness.
Some of the lines made me laugh out loud.
The campiness is just not campy enough, I guess, for me, I thought. I mean, like David Hemming's character is funny with all of his klutziness, but it's not, it doesn't feel right where it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I like, you know, I kind of chuckled with, things like Astro Navigatrix and.
Their psychocardiogram readings were in perfect confluence.
Yes. And I've got.
Or how about.
Primitive state of neurotic irresponsibility.
Right. One of my favorite lines was, a good many dramatic situations begin with screaming.
and she does fourth wall that. That is directly almost to out to us. In the camera. I mean, it's just.
Well, it made me laugh, so it worked.
That one did. And I was going, okay, so it is a comedy? Obviously. You know.
Yeah.
What were good and bad points for you? Scenes or anything? Like, I agree with you. Her costume designs are great all the way through.
Yeah, the costumes are great. The whole opening sequence is great. I read that they filmed that with her lying on a plexiglass sheet.
Oh, yeah, you can tell.
And so that you can tell at points that she's not really floating, but it kind of looks like she's floating. It was a pretty decent effect. The best part about it was, for me, the only thing I remembered was, what's his face? The flying guy.
Pygar. Pygar.
Yeah. I remembered him, and that was the only thing. So I didn't remember her landing on that first ice planet with the sled and the children and the crazy scene with the dolls coming after her with the really sharp teeth. All of that was like new to me. I was like, well, this is interesting. And then, of course, she meets the hot French guy or Italian. I think he's Italian. And he has sex with her. He basically says, let's have sex. And they have sex.
That's how you can repay me for fixing your spaceship, of course.
Right, right. I will fix your spaceship.
And if you'll notice, I'm just as hairy when I take my costume off as I am when I have it on.
Right, and that he is not. That was glued on. You could tell. It was gross. so that I like that scene. I kind of like the scene where they're in the giant maze planet and Marcel Marceau's running around actually talking, but I think his voice is dubbed.
His voice is dubbed. Yes, that's not actually Marcel Marceau's voice.
Right, and that's where she meets Pygar. And I don't know. It does strike me when you ask me. I mean, first of all, there's really no scenes that are, you know, beautiful that I would put up there and laud, but the let's get from this place to this place to this place is very obvious in this movie.
Oh yes.
I mean, it's not like there's much of a plot. It's like a badly written novel.
Well, yeah, and a badly, you know, kind of orchestrated sort of adventure sort of thing that doesn't work. There is no growth from her. She doesn't real, you know, I must have made this up. Because I seem to remember that what she learned was that actual physical sex was great and could liberate the galaxy. But that didn't happen. She blew up. She defeated the evil plot, but that was basically it. Then she flew off for probably a threesome with an angel and the tyrant queen lady. You know.
Right, with a really weird last line. In the movie.
Oh yeah, what was that? It was like,
it was something.
Why did
angels.
You, why did
angels
you,
don't hold grudges or something?
Angels don't have memories or whatever. Because she says, Pygar, why did you pick her up? Well, you didn't notice him picking her up. You were right beside her. Yeah. Anyway, right. But yeah, I've got even terrible ending, terrible line. That's in my notes.
I had cliche evil lesbian.
Hey,
she was kind of a cliched evil lesbian when you first met her.
My pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, great. Here we go.
Yeah, I always remembered the opening credits with the striptease. I thought that was that was an interesting way to do the credits.
Well, that's because she's nude.
Well, and yes, I definitely remembered that. I thought Milo O'Shea did the best he could possibly do because he actually has more lines than her even, really, in the movie. And he's probably the only other, you know, character that people remember or respond to other than Pygar, who is a blind angel, or not really an angel. He's an AV ornithox or something like that is the weird name for him. No other scenes really stood out to me that were interesting. I guess that the one that you've got now, the Hemmings one where they actually show how Earth has sex, which is basically with a pill and we just touch our hands, palms to each other until we're both satisfied.
Yeah, and she's already like hot to go because she's had real sex, but he's like, no, I want to experience it the way you used to and with the pill.
And, and Fonda plays that scene really well with the, okay, yeah, sure, great. So that's kind of a cute scene, I guess, to remember. But other than that, it's a very bad Flash Gordon ripoff, sort of. Really, that's the biggest key. That's one of my first keys is this is Flash Gordon.
Yeah, I don't know that I put that in my keys, but it is definitely one I thought of. I'm going to put it in there right now. I do have some casting stuff if we want to move on to that.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. First of all, you mentioned already that the original was supposed to be intended to be Brigitte Bardot, but that didn't happen. Before I get on to Barbarella, though, I have this note. Ian McKellen flew to Rome to audition for a role. He didn't get it. Empire Magazine said that Jane Fonda actually cooked him breakfast while he was waiting to do his read-through. I thought that was nice of her. Jane Fonda cooked him breakfast and he didn't get the part. Which I think is funny because this movie to me could have improved if it had Ian in it. That would have given it another level anyway. So
was he auditioning for this film?
Yeah, it doesn't say what part.
I was curious if he was auditioning for the film. I mean, who he would play. That'd be interesting.
But back to Barbarella, when Brigitte Bardot turned it down, Sophia Loren was offered the part, but she had to turn it down because she was pregnant.
Okay.
So this could have been a Sophia Loren movie. Raquel Welch, another of that type, was also approached to play the role, but she passed to star in Myra Breckinridge, that Gore Vidal movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that didn't do very well either.
Nope.
And then someone named Verna Lisi was asked to play her. She's an Italian actress. I didn't either, and this is why. She was an Italian actress that evidently was doing really well and had come over to become an American actress. But she, when they asked her to do Barbarella, she terminated her contract and went back to Italy, and we never saw her again.
Didn't want to do Barbarella?
Which I guess that's why we don't know who she is.
But why didn't she want to? Was it because she didn't want to do this particular movie?
I think so. I think because they wanted her to be a sex kitten, she was wanting to be a serious actress. And she said,
is it going to be sexy? Is it going to be really?
Yeah. F you. I'm going back to Italy. and that's what happened. So, and then I also had that while he was still alive, Roger Vadim had always been talking about making a sequel to this. And he either wanted Sherilyn Fenn or Drew Barrymore play Barbarella.
Okay. No, Sherilyn Fenn could do it, but I wouldn't put Drew.
I could see Drew back in the day.
Maybe. I could see her Poison Ivy-ish day, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
That's Uma Thurman.
No. There was a movie, Poison Ivy, where she was the girl next door. not the superhero voice in that movie.
Right. Okay. You're right. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah. And then, Alicia Silverstone basically did the same freaking movie, 5 years later.
She did. I don't have anything on John Philip Law, who played Pygar, or Milo O'Shea, who was the concierge Duran Duran, or Marcel Marceau, who we all know is a big mime. However, you mentioned David Hemming.
Yes.
David Hemming replaced Italian actor Antonio Sabato in the role of Dildano. For those of you that don't know, Antonio Sabato is Antonio Sabato Jr.'s father, who actually was an Italian actor. Antonio Sabato Jr. got famous over here in the States on soap operas and being a male model. Apparently, set photos exist of Sabato playing the famous hand sex scene with Jane Fonda, but it was deemed too serious and he was replaced by Hemmings because they wanted it to be more comedic. Now, you threw David Hemmings away earlier, but I would like to point out that we have covered a movie with David Hemmings in it, and you don't remember it.
I don't.
You don't. I can tell you don't.
Obviously, I don't. I mean, I know the name, and I know I've seen him somewhere. Yeah.
Well, he was also in Blow Up, which was the Italian version of Blow Out that Brian De Palma did.
Right.
And he also played Cassius in Gladiator.
Yeah.
The Ridley Scott movie. But we have covered a movie he starred in.
Was it Italian?
Profondo Rosso.
No, I don't remember. No.
Deep Red.
Deep Red. Oh, okay. The one... Okay, the one with the necklace in the elevator?
Yes.
Okay.
Dario Argento's first big hit. Well, I don't know if it was his first big hit, but it was a big noteworthy movie of Dario Argento's. I think we covered second season, maybe.
Now, was that pre this movie? When did that come out?
That was after this.
Okay.
Yeah, it was in the 70s.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure. Early 70s.
I did not know that. I had forgotten that. Yes, actually.
Yeah. So that's why I have cast-wise. It wasn't a lot, but I knew I had some.
I'm trying to remember. There was something else that Hemmings did later on that was actually pretty cool and memorable, but I can't remember what it was.
You're not thinking of Hemmings, that magician.
No.
With the long hair that used to run around David Copperfield.
No, not him.
Doug Hemmings. That was him.
Doug, yes. it was so watch notes I was looking at. I've got, this movie was like a young boy's wet dream, of course. But this really, really, really makes you appreciate 2001, which comes out the next year. And it's amazing that
It was the same year.
Those two extremes of science fiction could be in the same year.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because I had the same note. I said, I cannot believe this came out the same year that 2001 and Planet of the Apes came out.
Yeah. Well, and when he's actually transporting from Earth, giving her weapons and stuff like that in the opening, the Mission Impossible briefing. And I was thinking, okay, they have transporters just like Star Trek, which was on the air at this time.
Yeah.
It was just crazy.
It's what happens when cheap sci-fi movies get made, basically.
Yeah.
They borrow from the good ones.
Because I've got like Battle Beyond the Stars. Do you remember that one that came out after Star Wars? And
is that John Boy?
Yep.
Okay.
He's in that. And
Richard Thomas.
So is George Peppard. And the girl is the Elsa King of the She Woman. What was her name? Diane Canton. I can't remember right now. Anyway. That was another one, but that was a Roger Corman, So Dino is very Corman-esque, only in a different.
Sybil Danning.
So yes, Sybil Danning. That's it.
Okay.
So, you know, Roger Corman is a big key. I think Dino and Corman are a big keys for each other. You know, this kind
He's the Italian version of cheap.
Yeah. What do I have cheap, easy, fast that I can throw up and repurpose these sets and reuse these costumes or whatever, you know, sort of thing. But this one has some cool concepts that could have been really interesting. Like, those dolls are freaking creepy.
Yeah, they move slow. I'd have kicked them over.
Oh, yeah. And I was going, okay, so they only bite her arms and her thighs? Is that what? That's a very careful placement. But like, you know, that, the skating on the stingrays was a kind of a cool concept. The whole weirdness of I'm smoking a bong that's made of male essence kind of thing could have been like a whole female empowerment scene that they didn't do.
Right.
So it had some stuff to it, but then it also had, you know, lines like, let me adjust my tongue box.
Oh my God. When she said that, I just wrote tongue box? ?
For her translator. Instead of universal translator, it's a tongue box. Okay.
It's a tongue box.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You've got, you keep singing it, but I thought the soundtrack to this was absolutely horrible all the way through.
Well, I have to tell you that the lyrics make no sense. It's Barbarella Psychedella. There's a kind of cockashella about you. What the fuck does that mean? Barbarella, Barbarella, dazzle me with rainbow colors, fade away the duller shade of living. Get me up high, high. Teach me to fly, fly, electrify my night. The lyrics are horrible.
I'm so glad you read that. That's some Johnny Has the Keys poetry for you right there, folks. Like beatnik poetry. Mm-hmm.
You know. But I mean, I've got that rhythm in my head. The Barbarella, Barbarella. I like that. It's very swingy.
I thought effects wise, I thought the wings looked cool and the way he used them was kind of cool. The flying was horrible, but the actual prop was neat.
There's a little bit of a key in that. If you read on IMDb that the guy that plays Pygar, Jean-Philippe Law, is a big DC Comics fan, and he was a JLA fan, and he liked Hawkman, and he studied Hawkman comics before he did this role, and apparently the wings were supposed to be bright white, and he insisted on them being dingy and more like a real bird.
Oh, so, that makes sense. I mean, like it looked Hawkman's. Better.
Yeah.
I kept thinking, you know, the whole time, you know, was he the inspiration for Rocky, you know, in Rocky Horror?
That's a good key because, I mean, yeah, that's basically what he is.
Yeah. I mean, he's just blind. Eye candy. Yeah, he's just blind winged eye candy, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a very good key. Now that you mention it, I didn't even think of that.
I did see a trivia thing, which is kind of cool, which was that Mothmas, you know, they refer to the Mothmas, and it's this evil liquid,
yeah.
That is underneath the city and thrives off of negative energy. So they want evilness in order to, you know, be more prosperous.
It's aged Duran Duran.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Because that's the plot twist is, oh, the concierge turns out to be Duran Duran, the evil mad scientist that she's looking for. But in research, Mothmas is the company that makes lava lamps. And I thought it was interesting because when they were showing the graphic, I said, I even have in my notes, well, that's a big damn lava lamp that lives off evil. And it turns out that that's what that term is. That's where that name comes from.
Yeah, that is very funny.
So I thought that was interesting.
Let me tell you about some awards. Nothing.
Not even costume design? Come on.
Nothing. I put nothing significant, which means maybe it got some obscure Italian thing, but no, nothing at all.
I could understand why. Other than costume design, probably not anything.
I can do a little bit more trivia, and we can move on to keys if you like. David Gilmour, guitarist of Pink Floyd, was one of the session musicians in the score. I don't know that he played on the actual Barbarella Psychedelic song, but he definitely was a guitarist on the score.
Nice.
Probably a good gig for Dave.
Got paid for that.
There were two scenes omitted from the movie. One is her captured mole machine, and one her sexual encounter with a diseased rebel's robot. But everything else is very faithful to the comic.
Man, that comic. Well, it does have that very, you know, one of my keys is heavy metal, because it does have that kind of French, Italian comic book kind of mentality to it. Mm-hmm. Where everything is grandiose in the set wise, but very minimalist in the costuming kind of thing. And everything is just this weird, twisted societal view kind of thing. Like this one was, Earth has lost what sexuality is, and they do it by pills. Whereas this guy has a machine that actually takes the power out of your orgasm to further the mothness.
It is bizarre. But you know what? That ties back into Rocky Horror as well, the way the sex plays into the sci-fi.
Oh, I do have some interesting watch notes, like the scene behind you when she finally comes in and sees all of them. It's not that scene, but it's the same set later on, but the one where the girls are smoking the man essence, and there's other girls that are like in sex swings, roaming, you know, hanging around and all that. And I said, mm-hmm. Oh, so she actually found the Playboy Mansion in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
And I've got her costume seem to have been designed to be ripped and torn, because every one of them is ripped and torn.
Yeah, I noticed that. A lot of times she was in situations where it would tear.
I read trivia that the picture that you've got right now of her with all the birds, in the script, it was mm-hmm. supposed to be hummingbirds, but they couldn't get hummingbirds.
Yeah.
So they used lovebirds and other things. And also they filmed that scene for like a week. And she ended up actually getting sick because of all the bird crap. Yeah, because they were crapping all over the place.
I read that they said the birds were being blown into her by like a fan.
Yes.
And that they were pooping everywhere, and she was getting like covered in bird shit, and she ended up getting sick. I mean, I was like, ooh, if that had happened in modern days, there would have been all kinds of things not right about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I also read that, you know, because of all the script rewrites and people contributing script and everything else, there were even days where she called in sick when she wasn't sick in order to give them more time to rewrite scenes that they were filming the next day. So it was that kind of, you know, production schedule as well. But I've got, found the Playboy. Oh, plot twist of he's Duran Duran. And now I'm going to tell you my evil plan. It just reminded me of like, Michael Myers, in Dr. Evil. Let me tell you my evil plan. Sort of thing.
For sure. Well, you just mentioned a huge key, Duran Duran.
Yeah. Duh.
So I'm sure that's pretty much where Simon and the boys got the name.
They said so. They have said so. Yeah. That it was based
I think they even did a song about it. Or maybe I'm dreaming. Maybe I don't know if I read that or not.
Maybe they did a remake of Barbarella for you.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Barbarella.
No, yeah. You know what? There is a Barbarella song out there because I kept finding it when I was looking for the original. So somebody did one. Somebody did. I've got, I lifted this from IMDb. It says a lot of the set pieces were inspired by MGM's 1939 Wizard of Oz. But do you know of any? I didn't recognize any.
No. The only thing I could say was like the one you had up past, which was that set that had the archways that kind of went in the, you know, went in the background.
Oh, like Oz's chamber.
Very similar to Oz's chamber and very similar to the hallways in Oz and all that. But nothing else is even remotely, other than, you know, maybe the opium fields are like the ice field. You know, it's that soundstage with mountains and the worry back against the wall. So it looks like there's distance, but there's not, you know, kind of thing. I don't know. I didn't get, I saw that reference and I went, I don't get that. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, I don't get it either. One thing I found fascinating is that even though this movie is not what I would call the epitome of great cinematography, the cinematographer was Claude Renoir, and he is the son of Pierre Renoir and the nephew of Jean Renoir and the grandson of famous Impressionist painter Auguste Renoir. And I was like, wow. That's kind of interesting.
You have a Renoir. Obviously, this family has a very, very visual sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so there's ties to a famous Impressionist painting in this movie.
Right.
There you go. It's just paints thrown up on the...
Just thrown up. It's more like a Pollock than a Renoir, I'll just tell you.
Yeah, there you go. With a little bird shit thrown in.
Yeah.
Oh, what else? What else? What else? Oh, well, funny that you mentioned Dr. Evil. Mike Myers has actually said that Felicity Shagwell was based on Barbarella.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So, from The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Spy Who Shagged Me, the sequel. Yeah. I've got Flash Gordon and keys. I've got some other, like, sci-fi keys. So, his weapon is called a positronic ray. And that has a huge resonance with science fiction fans because Data and the later, all of the computer and AI stuff in Star Trek Next Generation is based on positronic technology. He has a positronic brain. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I had mentioned heavy metal. Also, there's kind of a weird vibe that's very Logan's Run to this in design. Oh, yeah. Element and also
cheap.
Soylent Green, not so much the visual, but the fact that the one that got me of Soylent Green was like when she first goes into the chamber in Sogo, and it's basically a suicide chamber. You pick how you want to die. You know, pick which of the three doors, you know, and that's the big deal in Soylent Green is people go to kill themselves not knowing that they're actually, you know, contributing to the food chain sort of thing.
Right.
I've got heavy metal, I mentioned, not only from the aesthetic of, you know, all this kind of tubes in the spacesuit, lots of plastic, clear plastic, whether it's in the visual balls or in the chamber of dreams or whatever, but also just in that weird kind of storytelling and throwing scenes together that don't really kind of...
And what was the key itself?
Heavy metal.
Oh, yeah.
The comic book and the movie. Sort of.
I'm going to read this one because you're going to know this more than me. It says, even though the titles of this movie are credited to Arcady, they were actually designed by the original Bond titles designer, Maurice Binder.
Yeah.
So the titles have a Bond connection.
Yeah,
It says his credits along with the music credits were part of the original rough cut of the movie, and they can be seen on the streaming versions on Amazon Instant Video. I'm not sure if I saw that version or not because I didn't watch this on Amazon.
I would think they're referring to the way that the credits animate on and off in the beginning. And especially the ending.
The ending is great. Waves.
Yeah. In waves and in the lava lamp is behind it and all that kind of stuff. That graphic is very, it's very Bondian too. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the end credits. I thought they were fantastic.
they actually worked for me. Yeah. Had the ending been worth it, it would have.
Right. I mean, the movie sucks, but the credits were great. So
I've got a key you might like. Well, I've got one key you'll definitely like, which is the scene behind you, the birds. It reminds me of the birds. She's being pecked by the birds, literally. And she's a blonde who's in danger and falling
she's
down.
She's a blonde, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, she's a blonde. Yeah. But one I thought you would like is all the way through this, from her very first scene with the president of the Earth Federation or whatever, all the way through, she kept reminding me of Samantha from Bewitched.
Elizabeth Montgomery?
Yes, just the way she would do her line readings and that kind of perky innocence that she has. Well, okay. Sure, I'll just lay back on the bed. You know,
so
it was very, very Barbara. I mean,
Elizabeth Montgomery.
Elizabeth Montgomery, yeah.
But would you say it was more Bewitched or more Elizabeth Montgomery? Because I'm going to use her as the key instead of the character.
I think it would be Elizabeth Montgomery. But yeah. It's Bewitched because it's because, you know, she is so innocent in Bewitched, the way she does stuff. Right. You know, and it was that attitude. And like you said, I think that was Fonda's way of giving this sex kitten empowerment rather than, oh, I'm just playing an object.
I'm just playing a sex.
You know.
Whatever. I gotcha.
Yeah, and that seemed to work. But that was one that got me. I kept going, oh, my God, I could easily see Elizabeth Montgomery doing this. You know,
I get a little confused because it keeps saying songs instead of score. And when I say song, I think of that Barbarella song I was singing earlier. But I have that Charles Fox, who wrote the songs for this movie, also wrote the songs for another well-known 1968 sci-fi movie. Would you like to guess what that would be?
I have no clue.
The Green Slime.
Oh! That's a good movie. Well, from what I remember, it was, but yes, that makes total.
the deadly mantis. Yeah,
that makes total sense because the entire opening of that is again, except instead of singing Barbarella, they're singing the green slime, the green. You know, it's really like that. It really is. I'm serious. Wait till you watch it.
It's got Richard Jekyll in it,
dude. It's got some. Some amazingly bad science fiction space suit stuff.
It is on our list.
Yes. Yes. I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Oh, and I was going to tell you, I added Battle Beyond the Stars to our list, too. It's on there as well.
Well, Battle Beyond the Stars is like a sequel to this. It would make a double feature so well. And I've got, and I think my last key is I've got Sogo. Sogo was, they said in the research, it was a reference to Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what Sogo is. So, you know.
I read that somewhere, too.
Yeah, a place of evil and everything. Yeah. So.
I only have one other key, and this one is a direct key that I had to look up. I think I've seen one. I haven't seen the other. But the initial zero gravity striptease sequence was lifted for two different music videos. The one I've seen is because I enjoy her a lot, is Kylie Minogue's Put Yourself in My Place. However, it was also used as late as this generation with Ariana Grande's Break Free.
Okay.
She has a song called Break Free. So.
And they use the credit sequence or they use the
like zero gravity striptease kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I mean, they're not crawling around on a plexiglass. I think it's a little more sophisticated.
Didn't Janet Jackson do that in like one of her and Michael songs?
There is some anti-gravity looking stuff in Scream, that one she did with Michael Jackson. Yeah,
yeah.
Where she's like spinning around. Yeah.
I mean, the concept is fairly fanboy, you know, comic bookish, cool concept. And it wasn't bad, totally badly executed in this. It's just, the rest of the movie didn't hold up for me.
No. No, but you may have had more fun talking about it with a straight co-host than you would me, who could really appreciate her hairstyles and her costumes.
Well, then the fact that when she actually had Earth sex, it literally curled her hair.
I mean, there were things I guess I could enjoy, like a big furry Frenchman on an ice planet and a half naked angel blind and flying around. I guess I don't know.
Half naked.
They didn't do anything for me.
Well, I mean, I think it's very interesting that Fonda did have the career that she had after this. You know, that she did become so politicized for a long time and then suddenly settled into showing how good she was as an actress, from On Golden Pond on and all of that and being
actually China Syndrome. I would go back that far.
Yeah, I would too. That's probably true. Very true. And then, of course, you know, the series, the Netflix series with Lily Tomlin.
That show is hilarious.
It is I really like that show. It is so well done.
Yeah. I've always been a fan. I know she's sort of a polarizing figure out there with some folks, but I just try to put her talents above anything else. And the fact that she comes from a famous family, you know, brother and father and now daughter. I mean, I don't know, or not daughter, but niece, Bridget Fonda. Is she still?
Oh, really? Okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, she was Peter's daughter, I think. But anyway. So but there you have it, folks.
That's Barbarella. I am glad we covered it. I really am. And I do think, you know, no, it was not on one of the 100 movies you have to watch before. I'm sure it wasn't on that list at all.
Oh, no, 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 no. When I said no awards, I meant no awards. I mean, I was like looking for them. And I think I found one and it was so obscure that I was like, I'm not even going to put this.
There's only 4 copies of this VHS tape anywhere in the world.
No. Yeah. Insanity.
But yeah. Well, yeah. But I'm glad we did it. And we're glad you guys listen to us and watch us, even with some technical difficulties that we have on this list. And
yeah. I mean, I had fun doing this aside from the technical difficulties.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said at the beginning, it's very interesting. We're going to have to look at the list for next year because, I mean, I've picked like 3 different really bad sci-fi examples this year. But that's kind of what we do. We don't have to always cover the hits. So I kind of like the fact that it's a broad spectrum of stuff we do.
Well, and when I say key elements that lift them above genre fare, they don't have to be great elements. They can be bad elements that make them stand out. So I do, you know, that phrase is, it can be interpreted otherwise.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, and we get suggestions from you guys. So if you're out there watching or listening or whatever, we'd love to hear back from you. A, what'd you think about Barbarella if you watch it? And what would you like us to cover in coming seasons and stuff? Is there a movie you would like us to do? Let us know. And also please do the subscribe and the ring and all of that. If you're very interested in us, we would love for you to become a Patreon member and support us that way, because that helps keep the website going and all of this.
We do have free content there as well as subscription based content. So
yes.
There's all kinds of stuff over there.
And there's 2 other entire podcasts there. So that's kind of interesting that we have that. Tim, I'll be interested in seeing where we land next week and where
that's a very good question. I couldn't remember what it was.
Well, I'm sure we will. I'll be terrified.
You will be. And we're going into horror territory.
Okay. Well, good then. we'll see everyone next week for more horror.
All right. Sounds good.
See you then.
All right. Bye.